Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am your host, Rick Stevens, and this is your show. Folks, remember, if you've got questions that you would like to have answered, if there is a topic you'd like to hear more about on a future Money Matters episode, feel free to give me a call at 719-500-8700. You can also go online, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click that contact tab up there. Send us the question. Send us the message. Feel free to send me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com. We'd love to hear what you want to hear more about. Folks, this week on Money Matters, we are live in studio, well, you know, as we're recording anyway, with Andrew Rogers. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Rick.
You got to be feeling pretty good where your Lions are sitting these days.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like Ricky Bobby. I don't know what to do with my hands, though, because, I mean, I'm just worried something's going to fall out, and I don't know.
Well, it reminds me of the old adage that a Chicago Tribune reporter years ago was talking about. You know, some people look at the glass and they see it as half full, and others look at the glass and see it as half empty. Mm. He said, but a Cub fan looks at the glass and wonders when it's going to spill. I got to imagine that works in the Lions world as well.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is. And, you know, it's like Ted Lasso. It's the hope that's going to end up killing me.
Yes, yes.
But other than
yes,
that,
indeed.
Doing good, just enjoying the ride.
Ah, yes. Yes, indeed. Well, folks, we are also riding this week with Kyle Fisk, that Fisk team over at Penn Trust Mortgage. Before we turn it over to Kyle for his 42 minutes of disclosure, we also have to throw out the fact that LPL Financial and FRS Financial do not endorse the guests that appear on Money Matters. Kyle, take it away.
Hey, good to see you guys. Always glad to be here recording live, whatever that means. All right. Can you record and not be live? I'm just curious how that works. Anyway,
I'm sure there's a way to do it.
Gotcha. All right. Well, glad to be here, and we're going to talk about mortgage rates and the economy and what's going on with the Fed and that 10-year treasury yield and lots of fun topics today. But all the material presented is for educational purposes and is not an advertisement to extend credit. Not all applicants are eligible for loan products offered. All loan programs, terms and conditions, including those pesky interest rates, those are subject to change without notice. I'm Kyle with the Fisk team at Penn Trust Mortgage and NMLS number 1949057. FiskMortgage.com.
That does it here for this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial
Group. Is that joke ever going to get old?
No.
Every time I'm here.
Yes. Well, when you've got that kind of a disclosure that you've got to throw out there.
Top five regulated industry in the world.
I understand. Mm-hmm. Wholeheartedly, I understand. At least mine is down to just like a sentence and a half now. It's a great thing. Well, Kyle, I'm going to actually kind of jump in because, yeah, we are going to talk things like interest rates and mortgages and all that fun stuff. And Andrew is going to be our voice of Southern Colorado and go, okay, but what does that mean here?
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I was on a call with a portfolio manager at an asset management company this week, and I actually heard something that shocked me a little bit. And on that call, the portfolio manager said, guys, we got it wrong. We were wrong about not just a couple of things. We were wrong about everything. And this was a portfolio manager on a multi-asset strategy. For those that don't understand what a multi-asset strategy is, what that actually does is there are different sleeves or buckets inside of a fund. Some of them are based on, say, growth stocks. Some of them are based on fixed income and treasuries. Some are based on things like real estate. And they're all trying to generate income from a multitude of places. And he said, we got it all wrong. And in particular, he wanted to talk a little bit about what they thought the Fed was going to do with interest rates back in January, where he thought everything was going. Kyle, they're not the only ones that got stuff wrong. Am I right about that?
525 basis points. That's 5.25% increase from the Fed starting last year in mid-2022. So in just over a year and a half, we have seen a massive, massive increase by the Fed that I don't think anybody saw it going as high as it's going. I don't think anybody saw it happening as quickly. To your point, there is a group of Reuters economists. They're very smart people.
Yes.
They actually know what they're doing, and they spend a lot more time than I do looking at the data. But for every month, they release a report related to the 10-year Treasury yield and what the projections and expectations are for that. For 4 months in a row, they've said, this is the top. And then the next month,
New top.
Andrew, yes. This one is now the top. And literally last week they came out one more time and, Andrew, all those other ones, fooled me once, fooled me twice. This is actually the top.
So it's like hiking the incline. You get to that fall summit and you're like,
there's more.
It seems like that's how it's been lately.
And I'm not here to poke fun at anybody because honestly, I think at the end of the day, Rick, you and I were talking before we started. Nobody knows.
Right.
Anybody who tells you they know what's happening with the 10-year Treasury yield, up and away. I mean, it just continues to skyrocket. You know, we were having a conversation with folks back in August when we were sitting around anywhere from 3.8 to 4.2 saying, could it actually get any worse than this? And we're at 4.8, 4.9 today, heading towards 5. And
yeah.
And honestly, I don't think anybody can really tell you why. There are some good speculative reasons. There are some really smart economists that say it could be this, it could be that. But honestly, nobody really knows.
Yeah, and my favorite part of all of that is when, and again, we can talk all these different pieces. We have almost every time you've been in, talked about all the little component parts. And one component part says it cannot go higher. Another component says, oh, it's going to go a lot higher. And theoretically, those two don't ever meet except now when they've never met before.
You know, I do a once a month state of the rate presentation with a group of realtors. And we actually did it this morning before we came down here to record. And where our big four observations are exactly in line with what you just said. The four big points we made today was one, 10-year Treasury yields are up, up, up. Number two, inflation is not as bad as it looks. Number three, the economy is not cooling as quickly as expected. And number four, the Fed is walking a very fine line. And we're going to touch on some of these, but I want to chat. You said something that sparked the both can't be. On one side, this has to be true, and on one side, this has to be true. Inflation is not as bad as it looks. And we'll talk a little bit about how inflation is starting to flatten out. And we're starting to see some indicators that say inflation could start to decline. But then on the other side, yesterday we got retail sales and consumers are still spending like crazy. And so we aren't seeing the economy cool off or slow down or these different indicators. And both of those at some point create a squeeze point, a choke point, if you will, that says these can't both continue to coexist. Something has to give.
Right. Right. And I think ultimately that comes to that question of really what is going to give. You know, one of the things that we had seen over the last couple years were folks who, yes, when we got the influx of dollars from the federal government, right, the stimulus pieces, but nobody was open, so you couldn't go spend it. So folks were putting that mm-hmm. away. We've seen the savings rate decline. But as you've said, the spending didn't stop. Because if you look at, okay, yes, we've spent some of that stuff we had put away, but our buying on credit has now gone up considerably from where it was a couple of years ago because, well, A, you couldn't buy anything a couple of years ago because nobody was open, and even if they were open, you couldn't get shipments of stuff in to be able to buy it. But on top of that, we went to, okay, I've got all this cash on hand. I'm going to go spend it once everything opens. And now that I spent it, I have kind of maybe as that consumer changed my mindset a little bit. I don't want to stop spending. I may not have the cash anymore, so I'm going to put it on a credit card and I'm going to start borrowing that way. And you can't have both. You're absolutely right. You cannot have both of those things coexist and have an economy that is blooming, if you will.
We're talking about three straight months in a row that retail sales have gone up. And every time we have, so we get to, you know, this month's numbers, and then we look and revise the previous month's numbers. Not only are each of the last 3 months up over the month before, but we keep going back and revising the original number even higher.
Yes.
We're talking about a dramatic, strong surge in consumer spending on things that aren't, Andrew, when we talk about consumer spending, there's a couple different buckets and categories.
Yeah.
We're not talking about paying your rent.
Yeah, we're not talking about utilities. We're not talking about groceries. We're talking about Kyle going and buying Taylor Swift tickets and now going to the Taylor Swift at the movie theater 3-4 times and getting the large souvenir bucket.
Restaurants, eating out, up 9.2%. 9.2%, that's crazy. If the economy was really slowing down, you would not have to wait in line for restaurants.
Right.
And right now we have to sit in line. That's a labor thing, too, but we'll get there.
I mean, 9.2%. Small details.
Food and beverage is up. General merchandise is up. Non-store is up. Yeah. This, you're right. These are not the essentials of life. This is discretionary spending that is up. And yes, we are seeing record levels of increase of credit card usage. But a big piece of this is also we have seen wages go up.
Yes.
We are seeing wage inflation. And so, Andrew, as the common guy, right, if I were to increase your income by 15%, you know, over the next 6 months, what are you likely going to do with that largesse?
Probably a little bit of discretionary spending.
Right.
Maybe go hit a car dealership.
Right. You're going to treat yourself at some level.
David Montgomery jersey.
Maybe.
But at some level, you're going to spend that money.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You feel like you got, if my wages go up, now the wages are really just actually trying to help keep you up with the fact that everything costs more.
Yeah.
But you don't think, oh, I'm spending more on gas and groceries and eggs and utilities, so I better just keep my lifestyle the same. If I get that wage increase, I feel, from a perception standpoint, oh, I have more money. I'd like to go on vacations are up. These discretionary items, because when I give you more money, now you're more likely to spend.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, we're so accustomed to that, you know, 3% COLA raise year to year. Anything above that, despite what's going on in the economy and what the numbers actually say, appears to be gravy to so many people.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, you know, as I'm sitting with folks and we're talking about different things, especially those that are getting into those retirement years, I like to have that conversation. Hey, you realize that we could still be, you know, we may have planned out 2.5% inflation because over the last 30 years, that's what it's been. But over the last five, we might need to use that 4% number moving it forward and expecting that to go up every year because, hey, if it's increasing by 4% every year, we in our retirement assets need that increasing by at least 4%. To keep up with the money that we're pulling out.
Correct.
You know, it's a lot of different pieces through there. Well, Kyle, let's kind of dive in a little bit here to some of these different pieces that we're looking at. You know, we were talking earlier. It all ultimately comes down to basic economics, right? There's supply, there's demand. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen or when we talk about the Federal Reserve and rates, and we'll kind of get into the machinations of how that, you know, really works on the mortgage side, but even on our housing side of things, right? We were kind of talking about you've just got done talking with a group of realtors, and you know, what's on a realtor's mind these days is, wow, it's slow out there.
Yeah, there's no question that we've seen overall decline in transactions here in the Pikes Peak MLS, the multiple listing service region. We're off about 24% lower sales volume, overall transactions year over year through the end of September. Okay. So, you know, a 0.25% drop in overall activity. And that's buying and selling, right? Because
right.
There's people on both sides of those transactions. But yeah, we're definitely seeing some slowdown. Now, what is, you know, all real estate is local, and we can talk about what's going on in Miami and Philadelphia or even Detroit if we really wanted to. But
we really need to talk about
Detroit. We don't
have
to.
Okay.
But all real estate's local. So when we look at Colorado Springs, you know, we see that overall inventory is increasing. Now, we still have much lower inventory than what would be considered normal or balanced between buyers and sellers. But we were at such a scarce level of inventory that when you increase that, it feels like a lot.
Yeah.
And so we're definitely have more inventory than we've had over the last couple of years. And I think what we're seeing is some very skittish buyers. And that's for a few reasons. I mean, first of all, if you go and get pre-approved, Andrew, you call me for a loan. We run some numbers, say, hey, let's go buy a $500,000 house, and here's what your payment's going to be. And you go out and start shopping. And, you know, you take a few weeks. You go out a couple weekends with your agent, look at some houses. You call me back 3 weeks later, and you say, you know what? We went and saw this house over the weekend. We really like it. Let's run the numbers on this house. And I run those numbers for you. And in that three-week time frame, your payment on the same price point of home has gone up $225 a month. And that's the real story of what, like, when we look at what's happened since the end of August and the increase in the 10-year treasury and the increase in mortgage rates, that's not fiction. That's the real story. And so how does that make you feel as a buyer?
I mean, demoralizing. I just want to know what you think we can get, you know, for that 500, because the prices still aren't cooling down compared to what we saw either, because that's kind of getting in, you know, the lower middle entry.
Well, even. and in our realtor meeting this morning, somebody was talking about how prices were declining.
Yeah.
Now, let's be very clear what we mean when we use these words, because he wasn't wrong. It's a matter of perspective.
Right.
He was referring to the fact that there have been several price reductions on the MLS. So a house that was listed at 625 just got reduced to 585. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is a sign of a cooling market. Okay. There isn't as much activity. I list my home. I don't get an offer over the weekend. I wait a couple of weeks or a month, and I decide I'm going to lower my price. But what did that person pay for the home? They paid $550, right? Now, if I sell my home and not make as much, that's different than losing money. So when we talk about prices declining, that's the you only see a price decline in a marketplace when that 550 house sells for 540.
Yeah, right? You're just talking about the profit you're taking.
Correct. So we're talking about, has the rate of appreciation slowed down? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if we were expecting 18-22% to continue, first of all, it was bad for the marketplace. It was bad for buyers. It was bad for affordability.
Yeah.
We're having huge conversations. The mayor's having a whole commission about affordable housing. I mean, there's a conversation happening in our marketplace that says we don't have enough affordable homes for people. You know, I just did a deal. I got an email yesterday from a captain in the U.S. military who's relocating here, has been looking at homes for the last 90 plus days, and sent an email to the realtor and I and said, never mind, we've decided to rent. We can't find. And I mean, he makes this is a guy who has a solid, stable job, a decent income, right?
Overall, probably even has a housing allowance.
He does, and he's got decent credit and not crazy debt. Like, this is normal Joe Public.
Yeah.
And he's at a place where he's like, I don't feel like I can afford to buy.
But let me ask this, though. I mean, wouldn't it almost maybe, in some instances, kind of be that old Warren Buffett idea that if everyone's running out, maybe run in? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, and the math may still work out that you're better off even sometimes paying the 7% and say 30 under asking price because of the market and people getting skittish than having to pay 100 over asking price when we had lower rates down into the twos, threes.
Rick, he's coming along.
He's learning.
We're training him well. I feel pretty proud right now, because I feel like, I mean, that was, wow. Andrew, I mean, we should end the show right now. You are 100% correct. Well done. Yes, I think there's huge opportunity. There's more incentive, more seller concessions statistically being offered in the marketplace today than there's been in the last 5 years. So I can go in as a buyer, even though inventory isn't great yet, it's still better than it has been. buyers have more leverage today than they've had in the last few years. Over the last couple of years, you're competing with multiple offers. In today's market, where some buyers are skittish, the buyers that are bold enough and brave enough to go out and look at homes and make offers, they have some more control. They have the option to say, okay, I want this much concession. I want a 2-1 temporary buy down. I want you to help me buy down my rate. I want you to pay my closing costs, right? And back to home prices in Colorado Springs are not declining. And so you're not losing money. Now, they aren't going up as fast. We expect, we're anticipating somewhere in the 4 to 8% range for overall home market appreciation in El Paso County in 2023.
Yeah.
Okay. That's still prices going up. So if you say I'm going to wait a year to buy, not only are you have to factor a few things. Number one, that $500,000 net house is now worth $500,000 plus 8%, right? Because I had a market appreciation. As rates come back down, and they will at some point, rates only do two things.
Right.
They go up and they go down. And right now they're going up and it's harder.
Yeah.
But rates will come back down. And when that happens, a lot of those skittish buyers, a lot of those millennials, first-time home buyers sitting on the sidelines, they're going to come back into the market. That will increase demand, which will drive prices
and create that frenzy. Because even your example you used earlier about going and looking and, you know, kind of taking your time thinking, coming back 3 weeks later, we haven't had that 3-week wait, and I don't remember how long to make those decisions.
Wait a minute. You can't make the decision in 22 minutes and make an offer? Oh, I'm sorry. That one's gone. We can go look at the next one.
Yeah. let me unlock. Oh, sorry. It's already off. But, and then that's the thing, because there's a lot of people talking about this, and I know it seems as if everyone, as far as realtors, lenders, it seems to be a 50-50 split amongst the idea of, you know, fall in love with the house and just kind of date that mortgage. I know you kind of brought that up a little bit earlier that, you know, the rates only do one of two things, hopefully. We've only seen one of those, as you've mentioned, 500 basis points over this course of this, but eventually they will fall. So you could maybe have a little uncomfortability now and be better off in the long run.
You know, when we look at inflation, we talk about everything going up in price. Gas, groceries, utilities, eggs, right? There's only one thing that doesn't go up, Andrew, and that is your 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. Mm-hmm. Like, once you do lock it in, regardless of what the rate is, it's not going up.
Yeah.
It can only do one thing, actually.
It can only
go down as you refinance. If and when, no promises, no guarantees. I left my crystal ball at home this morning. I'm sorry. But if and when rates decline, you can actually see that number go down. But you know this is my number. And so, especially somebody, I would argue, young, upwardly mobile, starting a career, you know you're going to make more money 2 years from now than you make today. As your income goes up and that fixed mortgage payment doesn't change, it actually becomes a smaller and smaller percentage of your income, of your budget. And so as your income goes up and that percentage becomes smaller, it becomes even a better deal for you. So to your point, if you can stretch today and figure out a way to make it work right now, you're in a better position. You know, a fascinating thing, I know we're pushing up against a break and we're going to have to go in a second, but I wonder if when we come back we should talk about what are people who are cash buyers, because people with cash, they got it for a reason. They're probably pretty smart. What are cash buyers doing, and what percentage of our buyers right now are cash, and what are they doing in the marketplace? Because to your Warren Buffett point, I kind of want to do what those smart guys are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Well, folks, we are up against that break. When we come back, Kyle's going to pay off that tease. So stick around. We will be right back.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Well, thanks for sticking with us through that break, ladies and gentlemen. Rick Stevens with you here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. Andrew Rogers in studio, as is Kyle Fisk, that with that Fisk team over at Pintrust Mortgage. And Kyle, headed into the break, you gave us that tease. You asked that question, what are the cash buyers doing these days? Because they got that cash somewhere. They got it for a reason, probably a good reason that they did that. and they may be making some smart choices here. What are the cash buyers doing, Kyle? What are they doing these days?
They're buying real estate. One of the things that we track, you know, we're the preferred lender for a bunch of the new home builders here in town. And so we get access to some of their data of what percentage, because obviously we're handling the majority of people getting loans for their
homes.
Yeah,
you're not dealing with a lot of cash buyers.
I don't deal with it. If you're a cash buyer, you do not need me. Most people do not wake up in the morning and say, you know what I want to do, Andrew? I want to borrow $500,000 today. No, they wake up and say, I want to buy a house, right? Mm-hmm. We are simply a means to an end.
Yeah.
Will you come to us because you actually want to buy an asset that's going up in value? Mm-hmm. You want to stop paying your landlord's mortgage.
Yeah.
You want a place to call your own. You need the right home for right now, and you want to invest in the future and build wealth. Yeah. And so you borrow money to achieve that objective.
Yeah.
But the cash buyer doesn't need me.
Mm-hmm.
So the cash buyer goes into the marketplace, and they've got leverage today. And so what are they doing? They're going out and buying real estate. We are seeing a higher percentage than we've seen in years in the new build construction. Somewhere around 25 to 30% of some of the new home builders deals are cash deals right now. That is a very large percentage for the overall market. And so these people are finding the opportunity to buy and get a good deal. These builders that are offering all of these incentives to buyers that need to get financing and saying, hey, I'll buy down your rate. I'll do this. That cash buyer says, hey, I like all those incentives. I'll just take it off the price. Thank you. And I'll walk into a better equity position of my home.
Yeah.
And so I still think there is incredible opportunity to be buying into a market that is still going up. Fundamentally, we've talked about it every time of the basic law of supply and demand governs this entire conversation. And nothing has changed. There are still too many people and not enough homes in Colorado Springs. I mean, fundamentally, we have more people than we have available homes. And as long as that imbalance continues, you will have a very safe floor for prices. You will see overall prices continue to increase, which makes it very safe as a buyer to say, yes, I want to jump in the pool.
Yeah, it's still a safe investment no matter what the Fed does. And that kind of leads to this next point about, you know, I know you said you left the crystal ball at home, but knowing that most people are wrong with this, what do we think's going to happen throughout the rest of the year? I mean, are we continuing on, you know, that Price is Right game? Is that yodeler just continuing, you know, do-do-do-do-do-do-do? Or are we going to finally plateau?
So, obviously, we've seen a slowdown in what the Fed is doing. They took a pause back in the summer. And then in the September meeting, just 5 weeks ago, they did not raise the federal funds rate, but they came out during their press conference and in their written remarks, and they spooked the market leading into Halloween month, right? They spooked the market by saying, we aren't going to raise the rates, but we anticipate one more 25 basis point hike by the end of the year. There were two more meetings still to happen, November and December. And by the one of those meetings, we're going to raise it one more time. And then they went even farther and said, we were anticipating potentially up to four rate cuts in 2024. What we have seen statistically and historically over the last 70 years of Fed management is the gap between the stopping of the increase and the start of the decline has gotten shorter and shorter.
Yes.
And so they were anticipating, hey, we'll stop hiking it at some point late 23, and sometime in early to mid 24, we're going to start actually declining the federal funds rate. But they came out and said, you know what? We're going to pull back on that.
Yeah.
And instead of potentially up to four, it'll probably only be maybe two.
Okay.
And the market reacted very poorly in one sense to that in terms of the bond market saying, and this message has been framed higher for longer.
Yeah.
So we're going to stay at this higher, more restrictive federal funds rate, right, for a longer period of time. So that leads us now to this meeting next week, October 31, November 1 is the next Fed meeting. What are they going to do? It's been fascinating because coming out of the September meeting, everybody said, hey, one of these, there's a rate hike coming.
Yeah.
So we were poised that this would be a rate hike.
Yep.
But in the last 8 days, so starting Friday, there's a blackout period. Nobody if the Fed can talk. But the week leading up to that blackout period, a bunch of them go out and do interviews and speeches and all of this. A dozen different Fed members have had different appearances from the Mortgage Bankers Association to an interview with the Financial Times, different venues, and they are all saying the exact same thing. I'm calling it Fed lock speak.
Yes.
Okay. They are in lockstep, in lock speak, saying the same thing over and over. Here are just a few. Raphael Bostic, the Atlanta Fed president. I actually don't think we need to increase rates anymore to get inflation to the 2% goal. Tom Barkin, Richmond Fed president. There's a story, a plausible story, that weakening demand is already working to bring inflation down to 2%. The Fed is walking a fine line to not overcorrect and damage the economy or undercorrect and allow inflation to emerge. Austin Goolsbee, Chicago Fed president. It's undeniable. Inflation is trending down. It wasn't just a one-month blip. Patrick Harker, Philadelphia Fed president. Absent a turn in what we're seeing in the data, I believe we're at a point where we can hold rates where they are. We could go, I could give you quote after quote after quote that are all saying the exact same thing.
Well, and all those sentiments are being echoed by the National Association of Realtors, the Mortgage Bankers Association, and other industry groups saying, please, please stop.
Yes.
But I guess it all depends, because again, that meeting coming up the 31st and 1st is if Jay Powell decides to dress up as Paul Volcker for Halloween and say, hey, guess what? We're going up. Give me my lederhosen, because I'm climbing.
So here's your prediction. The Fed will not raise the federal funds rate next week.
And you said earlier that most people who have been predicting this have been...
Not entirely correct.
It's hard, okay? Like I said, I left my crystal ball at home. But... no, I think there is very good evidence to say, and again, the Fed governors, these different voting members,
they're all in unison right now.
They're all on the same page, and they're sending a signal to the markets. Like, this is what they're doing, right? They're telling us we're not going to, and they did say in September, to be fair, they said, if the data changes, we will, and so they're simply saying, oh, you know what? The data has changed. The bond market is tightening itself. Inflation is starting to turn, and so we may not need to. The other thing, the Fed vice chair, Philip...
Yeah, I was going to say the name escapes me at the moment.
Philip Jefferson.
Yes.
Philip Jefferson, Fed vice chair, so number two guy behind Powell, had a big, long speech, and in there, he talked about this need of, we think it's restrictive enough, and the idea that we may not need to increase, but we just may need to leave it where it's at. And he also commented on the lag effect, because there's a big, all these things that the Fed does takes months and months to actually be felt in the economy.
Yeah.
So he had a really good set of metrics saying the changes we've already made, we need to see how it plays out. And so, yeah, I think it's pretty clear that we probably will not see a Fed rate hike, and we may not see one in December either. This very well, knock on wood, Reuters economist, maybe they actually got it right this time.
Maybe.
Could this be the top of the federal funds rate, and are we just going to see it stay higher for longer but not go up from here?
Yeah, so then let's go back to, you know, what this means here in Southern Colorado and for that consumer level. What is this going to mean as far as things kind of leveling out, kind of finding that new normal-ish? I hate that term, but it is kind of what it is, as far as those mortgage rates. And, you know, obviously that's one of the largest, if not largest, purchase a lot of us are going to be making. And we know the you know, twos and threes were probably historically low. We aren't going to see those again. Right now, we're in the sevens. But what's going to be that kind of maybe more median that, hey, this is going to be kind of that level where, hey, this is what it's going to be for a while, and it's going to ultimately be good for the market?
The answer is yes. There will be interest rates for the foreseeable future.
So a couple of the big drivers that we look at. Obviously, we talked about inflation earlier. We didn't dive into any of the deep dive of the – we got the consumer price index for September last week, and we won't go into those details. If you're a nerd and you want to geek out and you have questions about inflation, give us a call. We'll talk inflation. But the big picture on inflation is that while there are some things that could continue to see inflationary pressure go up, for example, oil and energy costs, especially with what's going on in the Middle East right now, overall, as we look at a lot of them, there seem to be several factors, including shelter, which is a lagging indicator. The cost of shelter, right? Rick, how often does somebody sign a lease for their apartment?
Generally speaking, it's a one-year
Once
sort
a year,
of a thing.
Right? So I don't see, even though rents might be coming down a little bit, I don't see it because it's such a lag effect for the data when I look at a year-over-year number. And so shelter components are coming down. That's a lag effect. Inflation is a major, major driver of interest rates, Andrew, it's a big thing that I think consumers can be watching, and we see it in the headlines. And in 2022, when inflation skyrocketed, we saw rates follow. As inflation starts to come down, you will see interest rates follow. there will be a lag effect there.
Yeah.
But as inflation starts to come down, we are going to see interest rates decline. There's also a really big spread right now. We think we talked about this last time I was here.
Yes.
Between the 10-year treasury yield and mortgage rates. So typically, you would see a 200 to 225 basis point. That's 2 to 2.25 change between a federal funds rate, between the 10-year treasury yield and a mortgage rate. So if that's at 4, then we should be at, you know, 6.25, right? Or if we're at 5, we should be at 7.25. Well, we're pushing 5 on the 10-year treasury yield and interest rates are over 8. It's more like 300 to 350 or 3 to 3.5% spread because of the cost of servicing and some other components. So as inflation comes down and as that spread gets back to more of the historical average, I do think that you have a pretty good, not just pie in the sky, not just optimism, not just glass half full loan officer guy, but actually some good indicators that say yes. As this continues to unfold, we will see interest rates decline. The question is, how far will they fall and how long will it take to get there?
Well, how far will they fall and how long will it take to get there?
I don't know.
TJ, we're going to need to cut that one out. Need that for the future.
There's a limit. There's a limit to my power here. Okay. I don't think that's where the real debate is, and that's a really fair debate.
Yeah.
But yes, I think overall, as we look at the data, they will come down. How far will they come? How long will it take to get there? But if we believe that, if you disagree with everything I just said, then don't buy a house. But if you believe that, then there is an opportunity because you can get in today. Take advantage of an opportunity to buy in a market where you have a little more leverage as a buyer. You can get some concessions with the fact that, my income's going to go up. That percentage of housing will go down. And when rates come down, I will refinance at a lower rate for the long term.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you were talking with a group of realtors today. Obviously, you're plugged in with a lot of the new builders. And one of the things we saw really drive the train locally when that market was, you know, I don't want to say out of control, but it had a very, very loose grip on control, was that overall supply and demand. How is that going? Are we taking this slowing time? Yeah, granted, we've had higher supplies, we've had labor issues, but are they, you know, able to try and catch up so that once things kind of get more normalized, we've got an almost even playing field?
I wish that were the case. Unfortunately, it's probably not true.
Okay.
We continue to have, we're now in multi-year span of having higher population growth in the Southern Colorado area than house creation, even with new home builders doing their thing. And because most of our builders, we only have a couple of the national guys playing in our market. Mm-hmm. Most of the big builders in our market, they're local.
Yeah.
It's Challenger, it's Classic, it's Vantage, it's Covington, it's Campbell. These are local business owners running a business here. And so they tend to be a little quicker on that spigot. So some of the builders we work with, they're going to build less homes in 23 than they built in 22. That's not a bad thing. They were just cautious of, hey, the market is shifting. I don't want to be stuck with a bunch of inventory that I can't sell. So they were cautious in how much supply they put out there. So overall, we are going to see new home starts and new home building permits in Colorado Springs, El Paso County will decline this year. So we're still adding supply, but unfortunately, we're not adding it at the same rate that we're adding people.
Yeah, well, and as you mentioned, too, it might not be the worst thing because when we saw, you know, the crash in 08, you know, a lot of it was a lot of these big multinationals coming in speculative just doing this, where now we've got more of that local control and they're able to really have their finger on the pulse a little bit more and make those smart decisions that, it might hurt if you are out there actively shopping, but for the long run and for the city and, you know, kind of our microeconomy here in Colorado Springs, not the worst idea.
Right. And overall, I mean, as an, you know, factor of inventory, like we've already mentioned, we are seeing more homes on the market.
Mm-hmm.
They are selling, honestly, homes in the, you know, top of the bell curve that are appropriately priced. We're still seeing most homes in the market sell in 30 days or less, which is a very, like, again, we got so conditioned by an unreasonable expectation that I can list my home and sell it in a weekend. That's usually not normal. And being at 28, 29 days is where we're sitting days on market. That's actually a very healthy, good number.
Yeah, and one of those things as well that I know I have heard, I've read, I've seen all these different places is that, you know, we're not going to get back down to those 2% rates. Those were artificially held down we're coming back to what would be quote unquote normal in the in that rate world. And one of the things that I actually take folks to is I say go to the El Paso County Assessor website. Go look at your home and all the times it sold, because every last time on there, the interest rate is listed. And when I pull up my house, it was sold before we bought it. It was sold in 2015 and had a 3% fixed rate at that point, which was really good considering what I'm about to actually go through. Prior to that, it was sold in 2007 for 5.25%. Prior to that, it was sold in 2003 at 4.75%. So we're in that 5 range. Prior to that, it was sold in 2000 with a 7.625 rate. So that's kind of normal in that 5 to 7 range, maybe a little above, maybe a little below. But when we're thinking of quote unquote normal in the last 2 decades, that's where rates will probably come back and land.
The 70-year historical average is about 7%, which is probably weighted a little bit by the fact that we had some pretty ginormous interest rates back in the 70s and 80s. If we can take those out, to your point, if you just really look at the last 20 to 30 to 40 years, you probably are very safe to say that a historical average is somewhere between 5.5% to 6.5%. Like, that's pretty routine and regular. And that's probably a healthy balance because, again, we have to have enough of an interest rate for the investor who's loaning the money to say, this is worthwhile for me to get a return on my investment.
Yeah, right.
Like when we talk about neutral interest rates, what we mean by that is there's enough incentive for somebody to loan money at that number, but it's not so restrictive that me as a buyer or as a borrower feel like I can't afford to use that money. So we're trying to find that middle ground where you as the buyer, as the borrower, Andrew, can borrow the money and feel like, yeah, this is a payment that is manageable. But Rick, as the investor who's loaning the money, feels like he's getting a return on his investment as well. And that's what makes the market work.
Well, and then let me ask this as well, too. And I know there's a lot of variables, so we'll just, you know, use this as an education only and entertainment. But we've seen a lot of this. A lot of the people did take advantage of the historically low, you know, 2.5, 2.75 refining when we hit that bottom. What, and a lot of people now saying, don't sell that home, turn it into a rental. But then from that same time, how would I say, call Kyle, say, hey, I want to do this, but I have this mortgage we're going to keep, not going to have a big pile for a down payment. How does that work to maybe turn that existing house with a historically low great rate into a rental and still move up to a house that might meet your future family needs?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the first point I would say on that is, number one, there are two reasons people buy houses. Fundamentally, every reason of why people want to buy fall into one of two buckets. You either need the right home for right now, or you're trying to create wealth and build a profit, build a portfolio. Those are, every answer falls into those two things. Don't let, yes, real estate is a great investment. I've invested in real estate. Rick invests in real estate. That is a great, great opportunity. But don't let that get in the way of getting the right home for right now. So the first thing I would say is, let your family get what you need. If that means you have to sell your home to buy the next house, do it. Don't let the interest rate stop you from never moving out of the house that you hate or the neighborhood you don't want to be in anymore, to stop you from being in the home or school district or the fenced backyard or the finished basement or the extra bedroom for grandma or whatever the case may be, whatever those drivers are. Go get the house that works for you and your family. Let's start there.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, yeah, okay, I want to keep this house because I've got such a great interest rate on it and the payment's super manageable and I can rent it for what I owe on it. So yeah, you can use that rental income to offset that mortgage when you come talk to a loan officer to get qualified for the next mortgage. Now, obviously, you still need to come up with money for a down payment. Mm-hmm. And we have to look at different loan programs. For example, lots of our buyers out here in Southern Colorado are using their VA loans. There is a maximum amount of entitlement that they can use to finance a mortgage. If I already have a VA loan, I might have to look at the numbers to say how much entitlement do I have left. So there's lots of details that go into this. But fundamentally, yes, there's nothing stopping you from taking what was a primary residence. And just because you bought it owner-occupied doesn't mean you have to refinance or turn it into an investment property. You moved into it with the intent of it being your primary, and it was. And now your intention has changed. You're going to get a new primary residence. You're going to convert that into an investment property, and you aren't breaking any of the rules by doing that.
Okay.
Folks, we are up against that last break in today's show. When we come back, we are, believe it or not, going to talk a little bit more in that real estate and interest world. So stick around. We will be right back.
Are you worried about what's been going on in the markets and how it has affected your portfolio? Maybe you need a financial checkup. If you have questions about the health of your financial future, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary checkup. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break right here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. We are in studio with my co-host Andrew Rogers, with Kyle Fisk, with that Fisk team over at Pintrust Mortgage. Kyle, coming into the break, we were talking a little bit about that whole, you know, as the investor, I'm going to keep my current house that I've got, as I've got the low rate on, because I'm going to convert that into a rental. I'm going to go buy a new one. What are some of those things that the investor can be thinking about on that real estate side that he can really take advantage of these days?
Yeah, before the break, we talked about there are two reasons why people buy a home, period, buy a property. One is I need the right home for right now, meet the needs for my family. And number two, build wealth. And real estate is a great way to do that. So we talked about get your family taken care of first, but then, okay, how do I use real estate as a tool? How do I leverage real estate to create wealth and to increase income and all of that? I have a buyer right now that's relocating here from out of state. He's keeping his home in the other market. He's going to rent that out. He's going to leverage the equity in that property for his down payment on a home here. He's going to make a smaller down payment here, so that means he'll have a larger loan amount. So his mortgage is going to be a little bit higher, but in his mind, it's worth stretching to have a higher mortgage, because if he sold that property, he can make a much bigger down payment and have a smaller loan and a smaller payment. But in his mind, if I can keep that one and have this one and get the overall appreciation on both, I'm better off 5 years from now. So are there some sacrifices that he's going to make? Yeah, he's going to adjust his things to be able to take on that higher mortgage here. But in his mind, this is a worthwhile investment for my future, for my family, for creating wealth. So if you have questions, it gets really specific around loan types and how much down payment and can I get a HELOC on that home to make a down payment over here and lots of specifics. If you have questions about how you're like, okay, I want to move anyway, but I really like the mortgage I have on this house. How do I convert this into a investment property? Give us a call. Go to fiskmortgage.com. Give us a call. Shoot us an email. We would love to connect with you and have this conversation. Let's sit down over a cup of coffee and actually review your situation and help you understand how to leverage that so that you can start creating wealth and still get in the home that's right for you and your family.
Awesome. And you know, there are a number of different pieces. Again, you know, we're talking about all the different cogs in the economic wheel over the course of all of this. What are some of those things? Because we had talked earlier offline here about an article that was out there kind of talking about some of those things that home buyers, that the buyers can take advantage of when actually looking at that new home, some things that might make it a little bit better deal.
Yeah, more concessions available today statistically than there have been in the last 5 years in real estate. Yeah. What do we mean by that? Well, you know, we look at the new home builders. We talked about those guys and all the incentive they have. But even in the resale market, what can you as a buyer get? And how do you take this position of a little bit more inventory, a little bit longer days on market, not quite as many buyers out there? How do you be bold, go out in the market and get a good deal? As a buyer, Andrew, there are three buckets of money on top of your down payment that you are going to be responsible for paying for when you buy a home. Yeah. Closing costs, escrows, and anything to manage your interest rate. Those are the three big buckets. Now, nobody can help you pay your down payment. That's on you. We call that MRI, minimum required investment. So your realtor contribution, your lender credit, a seller concession, nobody can help you pay that 3.5% or 5% or whatever down payment you're going to make. Mm-hmm. Nobody can pay that for you. But those other three buckets, closing costs, escrows, and managing your rate, we can use other people's money instead of your money to help you with that.
Yeah.
So what we can do, so that's a great place to start is, so first of all, my closing costs, the typical cost of actually doing the loan, the appraisal, the title fees, et cetera, right? Depending on the lender and the financial institution, could be anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 in closing costs. Are we asking the seller, hey, I want some seller concession. I want you to pay that for me.
Yeah.
That would be option one. Are you getting your closing costs paid? The second one would be, can I get a rate buy down on my mortgage? So there's two ways to lower your interest rate to help you get, obviously, if we lower the interest rate, we lower your monthly payment, Andrew. That's how this works. Okay. We're all on the same page. Just making sure.
The Detroit math, he can actually still work that way.
Okay. Okay. So there's two types of buy downs. There's a direct rate buy down and a temporary rate buy down. Okay. A direct rate buy down is using something called discount points, which is a fee that you're going to pay at the closing table to lower your interest rate for the life of the loan. So we're buying down the rate. We've heard that term. When we buy down the rate, we're lowering the rate forever, but there's a cost to that, and we can put that cost on the seller. So if I negotiate and I say, okay, your house is for sale for $550, I'll give you $550, but I want $15,000 in seller concessions. Essentially, what we're going to take is $15,000 of the equity from the seller. Yeah. And instead of giving that money to them at closing, we're going to come over on the settlement statement, the paperwork at the closing. We're going to move $15,000 of expenses that should be Andrew's. And we're going to move those from the buyer column into the seller column. And they're going to pay that for you.
Okay.
So the discount points can be paid to buy down that rate. Temporary rate buy downs, really, really popular right now. A temporary buy down. So, Andrew, you're buying Rick's house. Rick wants to help you do it, but Rick can't legally just write you a check for $10,000 to help you make your mortgage payments.
Yeah.
But what Rick can do is at the closing table, we can take $10,000 of equity he was going to make.
Yeah.
We can set it into an account. It's almost like an escrow. It's a little savings account inside of your mortgage. It's legally considered prepaid mortgage, and it's a subsidy. So I'm going to subsidize your mortgage payment. So you were going to be at $3,500 a month, all in monthly payment. And that first year, you might save $500 or $600 a month.
Okay.
So you make a $2,900 payment. I call it our little pot of gold. Our pot of gold makes a $600 payment. So the same full principal and interest all gets paid. Your amortization schedule doesn't change. This is still a fixed rate mortgage, not an adjustable rate. But you get to get into the home for those first couple of years at a lower monthly payment. And that really does two things for you. Number one, as we've talked about, over time, most people's incomes go up. So I get into the house at a payment that makes more sense for me, knowing that over those next couple of years, as my payments, as the subsidy decreases and my payment goes up that I'm responsible for, my income is going up to keep up with that.
Or it helps if the rates go down, you get that lower rate, then you can refinance to where it was.
He's got it, Rick. He's got it. He's got it. There's the second bonus right there. As rates come down, you're buying time. You're kicking the can down the road. Oh, and what's great about a temporary buy down? Let's say I put, you know, 12 grand in it on day one, a year into it, I still have $5,000 sitting into it, but I want to refinance. I get that $5,000. Whatever's left in that account goes against my principal loan balance if I refinance. And so in today's rate environment, where most people believe that rates will not be where they are today 2 years from now, a temporary buy down gives me the best bang for the buck in getting me a lower payment today while not leaving any money on the table. Because if I refinance, I get it all anyway. So it's a great tool in the marketplace. Now that has to be a seller paid concession.
Yeah.
So as a buyer, I can't just say I need it. But if I get creative with my realtor and go out and I'm buying Rick's house, some people are even saying, okay, hey, I actually think your house is totally worth $550. So rather than $550 and $15,000 in concession, I'm going to offer you $565 and want my $15,000 in concession, right? Because that's a way to leverage, even though Rick's still making what he's going to make, it allows me to get the benefit as a buyer.
Yeah. And then when you're talking about those temporary buy downs, is it, you know, it's all obviously negotiable, but is that kind of typical time frame, a year, 2 year? I mean, is it all just kind of
temporary buy downs are 1 to 3 years, depending on how they're structured, but can go all the way up to a 3 year. It's called a 3-2-1.
Okay.
So we can go all the way up to 3 years, but even just doing it for a year might be a very affordable concession. It might only cost you $5,000-$6,000 to do it for a year, but it might actually help you get into the, it might make the difference between whether or not I want to buy the house.
Yeah, it'll give you that time.
Exactly. The third thing you can do, so we talked about get your closing costs paid, get some type of rate buy down. The third thing is we're seeing a lot more willingness on the seller's part to fix things on the house.
Yeah.
So when we talk about that inspection or what's the condition of the roof or the sewer line or, you know, carpet or whatever the case may be, there's a lot more negotiating or pushing of like, hey, we want to buy the house, but this came up. We want you to fix it at your expense for us to, you know, stay with the deal. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a lot more willingness. So there's lots of leverage and lots of opportunity for buyers in the marketplace today. And I know it's nerve-wracking, and it's hard. You look at interest rates, you look at the news headlines, and you're like, heck no, I don't want to do this. But really understand your situation. Sit down with your real estate agent. Talk to your financial advisor. Talk to your lender and really understand, what position am I in? Where could I potentially see opportunity? What payments would they really look like, and can I make this work?
Well, and not speaking for all the realtors as well, but even the ones I've talked to, they've got a little bit more time to put up those creative ideas. They've got some more time to really get the negotiating, because it's not like they're having to, you know, juggle 18 different transactions this Friday ahead of 20 next Friday.
So I work with some of the best agents in Colorado Springs, and we had a room full of realtors this morning, and we actually finished our talk today talking about, put the data aside. Because at the end of the day, this is not about, I love the data, I like the economics, I can be a bit of a geek, I enjoy the numbers, but let's talk to Joe Q Public and Andrew in Southern Colorado right now. Put the numbers aside, put the data aside. This is a relationship business. Find someone that you trust. Find someone who has the heart of a teacher. We were talking with this group of agents this morning about, more so than ever, we need to be educators. We need to be counselors. We need to be advisors. We need to help people understand their situation, come alongside them, walk them through it, and really take the time necessary for them to understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. So whether it's your lender or your financial advisor or your realtor, if you don't have somebody that has the heart of a teacher, go find one.
Yeah, and now is the best time, because things will get heated up, and then you're getting that relationship down the road with somebody you trust and it's been through, you know, the bad and can go with you through the good.
That's exactly right.
So, Kyle, if there are those folks out there who are looking for that education, that want that information, or that simply say, hey, I am coming into the area, what can I afford? How do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, we would love to sit down and have a cup of coffee and help you understand your situation and help you understand this market and see what really works best for you and your family, and help even reverse engineer and say, okay, what payment do we have to hit? Okay, what price point does that look like? How much concession do we need? We can help you be creative and strategic and work with you and your realtor to get the deal that's right for you. So check it out, fiskmortgage.com, or give us a call, shoot us a text, 719-277-9238, 719-277-9238. We'd love to help.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, thank you for joining us this week. Folks, that is all the time we've got on Money Matters for this week. If you've got those questions, if maybe you missed the phone number there, you can always give me a call, 719-500-8700. Happy to get you connected with the folks over with that Fisk team at Penn Trust. We will be back next week, and I know it's going to be hard to believe, but we're going to be talking about your money. And the reason we're doing that is because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.